Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners, so we speak a little slower and we use words and phrases, especially written, for people learning English.
We also explain words and language rules, all while bringing you stories and information from around the world. Today on the program, you will hear stories from Alice Bryant and Mario Ritter. Later, Kelly Jean Kelly will bring us America's Presidents. But first, here is Alice Bryant.
For years, people fleeing from war and oppression have sought asylum in nearby countries. Now, the United Nations is warning that countries are increasingly using refugees as tools to support their local and national interests. Filippo Grandi is the UN's High Commissioner for Refugees, or UNHCR. He says many refugees are being used as pawns as traditional guarantees of asylum appear to be breaking down. Grandi spoke at the Refugee Agency's annual conference in Geneva, Switzerland. The UNHCR reports a record 65.6 million people had been forcibly displaced by war and persecution worldwide by the end of 2016. This includes 22.5 million refugees who had crossed from one country to another. The UNHCR reports that in 2017 alone, more than 2 million people have fled their countries as refugees. Grandi told the delegates that in just 5 weeks, 500,000 Rohingya fled from violence in Myanmar. During the same period, he noted, more than 50,000 people fled South Sudan, while 18,000 others were escaping clashes in the Central African Republic. Grandi said that in some ways, refugees have always been used for political purposes. But, he said, the problem has worsened in recent years. He said refugees have become a major issue in local and national politics and even in relationships between governments.
Protection is constantly being tested, and at times it even seems that refugees have become a commodity, traded between states. Principled leadership has frequently given way to an erosion of refugee rights, driven by confused and sometimes frightened public opinions, often stirred up by irresponsible politicians.
Grandi told the conference that immigration and asylum policies have become more restrictive in some countries. He said some countries that welcomed refugees in the past also have their own histories of exile and migration. He added that refugee protection is weakening in many areas, including in industrialized countries. He says protection of refugees is breaking down in traditional countries of asylum in Europe, the United States, and Australia. I'm Alice Bryant.
Russia's space program faces hard questions as it marks the 60th anniversary of the launch of Sputnik, the first man-made satellite. Some experts are wondering how Russia's aging rocket designs will compete with new, less costly rockets. 60 years ago, the area known as the Soviet Union was in a fierce competition with the United States to reach beyond Earth's atmosphere. Tensions between the world's biggest nuclear powers, the United States and the USSR, were high. The Cold War between the two competing sides, which began after the end of World War II, was intensifying. Then, on October 4, 1957, news broke that the Soviets had placed the first artificial satellite into orbit. Called Sputnik, the satellite was a small sphere, 58 centimeters wide and about 84 kilograms in weight. It contained two radio transmitters that sent out a beep that could be received by radio operators on Earth. The satellite was tiny, yet it started the extremely costly competition known as the space race. The race would end with the Americans' Apollo moon landings in 1969. In October of 1957, however, many people in the West were shocked. The Soviets had put an object in Earth's orbit, and they had done it before the West. Soviet media said it was because the socialist political system of the USSR was better. In the U.S., lawmakers placed an urgent importance on science education in an effort to catch up with the Soviets. The project to launch the first satellite into space was a product of the Soviets' development of their first long-distance missile, the R-7. It was designed as an intercontinental ballistic missile meant to strike the U.S. with a nuclear warhead. Sergei Korolev led a team that was building the rocket. He had the idea to place a simple satellite on the rocket. The Soviets were already planning a satellite that would carry scientific instruments. But Korolev pushed for a basic satellite design that could be put into space quickly, before the U.S. could attempt a launch. The designers considered a cone shape for Sputnik, but Korolev insisted on a sphere. He is quoted as saying, "The Earth is a sphere, and its first satellite also must have a spherical shape." A main part of Russia's Soyuz space capsules that are still in use today also is spherical. Although the Soviet Union came apart in 1991, the Russian Federation remains very important in the space industry. But observers point out that the Soyuz rocket boosters Russia uses to carry people and supplies to the International Space Station are very old. The Soyuz rockets are modified versions of the S-7 that carried Sputnik into space. Another rocket used by Russia, the Proton, was designed in the 1960s. These rockets have earned a reputation for reliability over many years of service. But recent launch problems have raised questions about the quality of parts manufactured for the vehicles. Officials found problems with the Soyuz and Proton rockets in 2016 at a factory in the city of Voronezh, in western Russia, where the engines for both rockets are built. Russia's space agency sent 70 rocket engines back to the production lines to replace problem parts, the Associated News agency said. These issues led to a one-year suspension of Proton launches. That suspension caused Russia to fall behind both the U.S. and China for commercial satellite launches in 2016. Russia had led the world for more than 10 years before that. Russia's space agency, Roscosmos, also decided on cost-cutting measures. It cut Russian International Space Station crews. The AP reports that two cosmonauts instead of three are to be used. Cosmonaut is the Russian term for astronaut. Many people in Russia have criticized the cuts. However, Russia has spent huge amounts of money on a second space launch center in the far east of the country near Vostochny. The new spaceport is meant to offer an alternative to the Baikonur Cosmodrome in Kazakhstan, where Russia launches almost all its rockets. Despite the money put into the new center, work in Vostochny has been slowed by workers' protests over pay and the arrest of construction officials accused of corruption. And people with ties to the space program have criticized the spending on Vostochny at the expense of other priorities. For example, Maxim Surayev was a cosmonaut who is now a lawmaker. He criticized the low pay of workers at the cosmonaut training center near Moscow, known as Star City. It's wrong when, instead of fulfilling their task to prepare for spaceflight, they have to find side jobs and a place to live, Surayev told Parliament. In addition to budget and manufacturing problems, the Russian space program has seen some projects postponed. For instance, space agency officials had hoped to launch the Russian module for the ISS in 2007. But the module has been delayed for many years. The launch is now planned for next year, but some reports say another delay is possible. Yet Russia's space presence, with its 60-year history, continues, dating back to the first launch that shocked the West. On October 4th this year, AP said that Sergei Ryazansky posted on Twitter a picture of himself holding a small model of the Sputnik satellite. Ryazansky is currently a cosmonaut on the International Space Station. He was marking the 60th anniversary of the historic launch. Ryazansky had a special reason to note the event. His grandfather was the chief designer of radio guidance systems for space vehicles during the Soviet era, and he was involved in the Sputnik launch. In August, Ryazansky helped release five very small satellites that were manufactured by a 3D printer. One of the handheld satellites honored Sputnik's 60th anniversary. I'm Mario Ritter.
VOA Learning English presents America's Presidents. Today we are talking about Franklin Delano Roosevelt. Earlier we told about his rise to power and his health problems. When he was 39 years old, FDR, as he was often called, became paralyzed from the waist down. He was never able to walk independently again. But that did not prevent him from becoming one of the country's most powerful presidents. When FDR took office, the United States was in a severe economic depression. Many farmers were not able to sell their crops for profit. Banks across the country had failed. A number of Americans lost their savings and their homes. And more than 25% of the workforce did not have a job. Yet when FDR took office in 1933, he told people, "The only thing we have to fear is fear itself." When Americans think of FDR, they often think of that statement. It showed his spirit of hope and confidence for which he became known. Americans also remember FDR for the way he began his presidency. In his first 100 days, he signed more than 70 bills into law. Some led to major changes in the country. They helped calm the country's banking industry, provided federal aid directly to farmers and the unemployed, and created public works programs. The acts formed the base of what FDR and others called the New Deal. Some New Deal programs, including the Civilian Conservation Corps and the Tennessee Valley Authority, created government-funded jobs. In addition to providing a paycheck for workers, the programs were meant to improve and care for the country's natural resources. For example, workers planted trees, made roads, and built dams and power plants. Americans continue to experience the effects of these programs today. FDR is also remembered for the way he communicated with the public. At that time, as many as 90% of Americans owned a radio. So, from time to time, FDR spoke to the public on radio broadcasts that became known as fireside chats. The term created an image of the president sitting comfortably near a fireplace, talking informally with a few close friends. In fact, FDR gave these talks from his office in the White House. But his voice was warm, and he spoke in an easy, conversational way to listeners, whom he called my friends. The combination of FDR's hope, energy, and affectionate concern for everyday Americans made him popular with many voters. He was reelected easily in 1936. But FDR had critics, too. Some pointed out that many of his programs failed. They cost a lot of money or were simply not effective. Others said that FDR's policy of massive government intervention was not American. It restricted capitalism and the free market. Still others observed that FDR's programs did not help everyone equally. Many New Deal programs aimed to put young, white American men to work. Women, racial minorities, and older Americans were often overlooked. Critics and supporters alike also noted that FDR greatly expanded the power of the presidency. He added a number of full-time positions to the executive branch of government, and he took on the power of Congress to make laws. Even the Supreme Court found that FDR had, in some cases, gone too far. It ruled that some of his actions were illegal. FDR worried that the Supreme Court would block many of his other New Deal programs, too. So he proposed a rule. It would give the president power to appoint 6 new members to the 9-member court. His appointments would almost certainly make sure that his New Deal programs could continue. Many historians point to FDR's efforts at court packing as one of the most extreme examples of his attempts to expand presidential power. But Congress did not accept FDR's proposal. 9 justices remained on the Supreme Court. However, those justices went on to approve FDR's actions anyway. They supported programs such as Social Security, which was set up to help older adults, disabled people, and others who needed support, and the Wagner Act, which permitted workers to organize in a trade union. While these efforts and other programs were important parts of FDR's reform efforts, they did not stop the Great Depression. None of the New Deal programs really did. The economy continued to struggle. For several years, the president had been warning lawmakers and other Americans about the political forces in Japan, Germany, and Italy. Leaders in those countries supported nationalist movements and had already invaded or taken control of other areas. By 1941, more than 30 countries were involved in the conflict. Many Americans had wanted the U.S. to remain neutral. They regretted becoming involved in World War I. For years, they had taken steps to prevent another major international conflict. Lawmakers had even banned the U.S. government from selling or giving weapons to warring countries. But FDR believed World War II was different. He believed that Germany was the clear aggressor and needed to be stopped. So, in the 1930s, FDR received permission from Congress to provide weapons to the countries opposing Germany. After Germany took control of France, FDR received permission to give direct military aid to Britain. In addition, FDR began preparing the U.S. military for war. On December 7, 1941, Japanese forces bombed American ships at the U.S. Navy base in Pearl Harbor, Hawaii. More than 2,400 Americans died at Pearl Harbor, and more than 1,700 were wounded. The day after Pearl Harbor was attacked, Congress quickly approved FDR's request to declare war against Japan. 3 days later, Germany and Italy declared war on the United States. American lawmakers responded in kind. The U.S., which had remained neutral for many years, was now completely involved in World War II. During the war, FDR directed much of his attention to what would happen after the fighting stopped. He wanted to create an international order that would improve peace and cooperation. To that end, he helped organize 26 countries into a group he called the United Nations. FDR also believed that the world's future security depended, in large part, on cooperation between the U.S. and the Soviet Union. He worked hard to create friendly relations with the Soviet leader, Joseph Stalin. Stalin, FDR, and British Prime Minister Winston Churchill all famously met at the Russian town of Yalta. There, the three men discussed plans to bring World War II to an end. They decided to demand that Germany surrender unconditionally. They also talked about diplomatic relations after the war ended. At the time, many Americans believed the Yalta Conference was a success. Soviet officials agreed to enter the war against Japan. In return, U.S. officials said the Soviet government could regain control over parts of northeastern China. Soviet officials also agreed to let countries in Eastern Europe hold free elections and to share rights to veto UN decisions. In the eyes of many Americans, the Yalta Agreement showed that the United States and the Soviet Union would be able to cooperate. FDR did not live to see the effects of the Yalta Agreement or even the end of the conflict. He had been president for 12 years. A few weeks before the Yalta Conference, he had been sworn in yet again. FDR had already served longer than any U.S. president. All others before him had followed the custom set by the first president, George Washington. They had served no more than two terms. In the winter of 1944, FDR was beginning his fourth term. But people close to him said he did not look well. Doctors also warned Roosevelt that his health was suffering. So, in April, FDR went to a warm water resort in Georgia, where he often rested and recovered his strength. There, he suffered a cerebral hemorrhage. In other words, his brain began to bleed. World leaders, including Stalin and Churchill, said they were shocked he had died. Many Americans felt the same. They stood alongside train tracks as his body was carried from Georgia to his childhood home in New York. He is buried there at Hyde Park. In 1962, his wife Eleanor died and was buried next to him. Today, Franklin and Eleanor Roosevelt are important figures in U.S. history. Many programs from the New Deal are still in effect now. FDR also changed the position of president into an active, powerful leader who legally intervenes in the economy and seems to have a personal relationship with Americans. And Eleanor Roosevelt developed a strong voice of her own. Her humanitarian efforts and work on behalf of civil rights and women's rights have given her a legacy independent from her husband. Both admirers and critics point to the Roosevelts' influence as evidence of their strong feelings about the couple. I'm Kelly Jean Kelly.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.